Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
I don't love you anymore. It's just that simple.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, a special presentation to all of our stations. If you're listening right now, you can watch the documentary as well as listen to it by going to the button at the top of the PRN.fm page, Deadly Deception. You'll see a button. Just push the button. It begins the video. For everyone else, you'll be listening to it. It's packed with information, information we need to know. Now to our special presentation. Expose a baby to a hepatitis B vaccine upon birth and vitamin K shots? Where is the science? 56 days of life on this planet, the physician, more often than not, will give upwards of 7 different vaccines, including the DPT, which is the diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, polio vaccine, and another hepatitis vaccine, and a Hib vaccine, which is the hemophilus influenza vaccine, and possibly also a Prevnar vaccine, which is 7 strains of strep. It is like giving 20 to 30 vaccines, and the antigens from each one of these are now in the baby's body. And this process is reported to happen every 2 months, 4 months, and 6 months. They get another huge dose at 1 year of age.
Over 50% of our pediatric population on chronic medication. We've got a situation now that is an unchecked growth of recommended or mandatory vaccinations for school children, and there is nothing to keep it in check.
What has happened over the last 25 to 30 years to cause this epidemic of autism? The only thing that really has changed is the number of vaccines being given to children.
We're giving 49 doses of 16 vaccines to children before the age of 6. If you went into the hospital and the doctor said, I'm going to give you 16 different medications on different schedules, you would look at that doctor as if they were crazy, because you understand that when you start mixing medications, you are creating this entirely uncharted world of reactions. You don't know how those things are going to react in combination.
I just don't understand why our kids are getting so many shots, and I think of my father-in-law on a different standard, just in terms of common sense, where he's elderly, but he's taken 8 pills. They found out that a lot of them have effects and impacts on other pills. And that's why I don't know that we're spending enough time and energy looking at this, where our kids are getting twice the shots of everybody else.
All these children with varying degrees of brain and immune system dysfunction become adults, and some of them will never be able to be productive members of society. They will always need to be taken care of institutionally, especially when their parents can no longer care for them.
It's a tremendous cost burden to care for somebody with a developmental disability over their lifetime. There's not enough money in the United States to counter the cataclysm that we're heading to if we continue on this course.
And they say that it costs the country, I didn't realize it was to this magnitude, $137 billion a year in annual cost this country for care of autism. Do you agree with that number? Either of you?
Again, I would not have the data to agree or disagree. I know that it's a high number.
Okay, well, I just want to let you know, we've got to spend more time and resources and fix this problem, because it's obviously, it's out of control.
If you look at the pathology underlying all of these diseases, it's chronic inflammation. The immune system is attacking something. That's something that has been injected or inhaled or ingested into the body that the body perceives as a threat. So the question is, can vaccines in any way contribute to this chronic inflammatory state? And the answer is unequivocally yes. Its sole reason for injection is to cause inflammation in the body. The ingredients in vaccines are completely capable of inducing chronic inflammation in the body.
One in six children in America is learning disabled. One in nine has asthma. One in 50 becomes autistic. Millions are suffering with brain and immune system dysfunction that cannot be explained. An epidemic of chronic disease and disability, the likes of which we have never seen in the history of this country.
There is a general assumption among all physicians, scientists, nurses, and pharmacists, those responsible for giving vaccines, that they have been proven safe and effective. What is the proof?
It has been proven time and time again, the different components that are used in vaccines are toxic. And mercury, which is still in the flu shot, which is still in the maternal flu shot and is available and is being given to women in any trimester of pregnancy, which is literally toxic down to parts per billion. The allowable amount of mercury in water is about 2 parts per billion. And the amount of mercury that is given in a vaccine is 25,000 parts per billion. So we're regulating vaccines differently than we're regulating drinking water.
Vaccines contain formaldehyde and they contain chemicals far in excess concentrations of what the EPA says is safe. Mercury in the past was used as a preservative. The reason it works as a preservative is because it's so cellular toxic. Because if you put mercury in a culture of cells, they will just die. Things don't live in the presence of mercury.
This footage from the University of Calgary demonstrates the degenerative effects of mercury on brain neurons. Very low concentrations of mercury were added to the culture medium for 20 minutes. Over the next 30 minutes, the neurite membrane underwent rapid degeneration, leaving behind the denuded neurofibril seen here. These findings reveal important visual evidence to how mercury causes neurodegeneration.
I'm convinced that the mercury in vaccinations is a contributing factor to neurological diseases such as autism and Alzheimer's. I'm convinced of it after all those years we had hearings. But that word, conclusive, there's no conclusive evidence, creates a doubt. And my question to the presidents and CEOs of pharmaceutical companies has always been, if there's any doubt that the mercury in vaccinations can cause a neurological problem, then get it out.
We're now telling our senior citizens to take flu vaccine. And guess what's in flu vaccine? Mercury. Mercury, every year, a senior citizen gets their flu jab. Every year, a bit more toxin is accumulating in their brain. And what are we now getting? An epidemic of dementia. This is our granddads and our grandmothers. These are the people we're now poisoning with our vaccines.
These health authorities made the recommendation that all infants have to receive 2 doses of an influenza vaccine at 6 months of age and 7 months of age. 90% of all influenza vaccines are multi-dose vials that contain thimerosal, which means that they're laced with mercury.
Worse than mercury is there other contaminants, lots of them. There's fetal tissue cells. There's mouse retrovirus DNA. Generations in the future, your offspring, your grandchildren or great-grandchildren are no longer to be you because they're gonna be mixed, human DNA is gonna be mixed with animal DNA, with other tissues. You have glyphosate, which is a carcinogen, as confirmed by Denmark 2 years ago, as confirmed by California just last month, and that contaminates the medium that vaccines are created on.
Glyphosate, Roundup, is actually in all vaccines that we've tested, Roundup. Roundup has never been tested for safe as an injectable. Glyphosate specifically is very toxic at a micro low dose.
They're finding stainless steel, micro nanoparticles. They're finding industrial waste in vaccines. They took random and tested. This is going into our bloodstream. The human body, the tissue, is not meant to excrete this kind of contaminants.
What happens when you inject polysorbate and Roundup together with aluminum and mercury? It's going into somebody's brain. I mean, what are we doing?
There are dozens of studies that I have documented confirming that aluminum is a very serious neurotoxin. It's in the Hib vaccine, Haemophilus influenza type B. It's in the pertussis vaccine. When they give you a DTaP vaccine for diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, your child is receiving aluminum. And it's in the pneumococcal vaccine. You're getting it in the hepatitis B vaccine. And the reason they put aluminum in these vaccines is because aluminum is an adjuvant that stimulates antibody production.
The aluminum is not the same aluminum in the vaccines as what you're exposed to when you eat it or when you breathe it in. It is a very different type of aluminum, and it's made into something called a nanoparticle. It has properties that can pass through the cell membranes anywhere in the body, including the blood-brain barrier and the brain.
The medical authorities will also say that you can easily excrete aluminum in vaccines, but that claim makes no sense whatsoever, because aluminum would be a very lousy adjuvant if it was excreted. The whole premise of an adjuvant is that it stays in your body and it boosts the immune response. And we have now data that shows that humans retain aluminum from vaccinations up to 8 years following injections.
With an aluminum nanoparticle attached to the bacterial and viral antigens, it's a beautiful passageway for the aluminum to go through the blood-brain barrier into the brain. And any entrance of material into the brain that doesn't belong there will cause an inflammatory response. And studies in animals have shown that if you cause an inflammatory response in a developing brain, you actually halt development at that site until the inflammation subsides.
Part of the adjuvant aluminum, once in the brain, it triggers abnormal autoimmune inflammatory reactions.
You have all these hundreds of chronic illnesses with underlying pathology of mitochondrial dysfunction. And aluminum is capable of creating that mitochondrial dysfunction.
And a recent study in the journal Vaccine acknowledging that women that received thimerosal-containing flu vaccines during pregnancy are having spontaneous abortions at rates 7 times greater than women that don't receive the thimerosal-containing vaccines.
We have in vaccine science a polysorbate 80 emulsifier in the majority of vaccines bound to an aluminum nanoparticle that's tightly bound to bacterial and viral antigens. There's a study looking at rat intestinal cells using an ingestion of polysorbate 80 that shows that the passage of polysorbate 80 through the intestinal cells of rats occurs through the destruction of mitochondria. 2 pieces of vaccines, just aluminum as a nanoparticle and polysorbate 80 as an emulsifier, which both are capable of interfering with mitochondrial dysfunction.
I couldn't find one study on polysorbate 80 that looked at it as an injectable. The only studies that they look at is cosmetic use, topical cosmetic use, and yet we're injecting it. So when you put it in a vaccine with live viruses and heavy metals and you're opening the blood-brain barrier, what do you think you're doing?
To make a vaccine is essentially a manipulation of nature that can only possibly end in disaster. Because what you have to do is you have to go out and find a pathogen, bring it into the lab, and then you have to multiply that pathogen and adjust it to be in the form that you want it to be in, to ultimately be injected into an infant or a toddler or an adult.
There is a cognitive disconnect when it comes to vaccines. On the one hand, we're told that they're safe and effective. The U.S. Public Health Service, the CDC, the FDA, all state unequivocally that you may occasionally find a bad hot lot, but otherwise, they're perfectly safe.
The pharmaceutical industry continues to assert that vaccines are safe. They continue to assert that we need blanket immunity. The CDC, the FDA, and the pharmaceutical industry and health authorities don't like to let people know about the vaccine database, VAERS, that records and documents reports of vaccine damage. They don't like to report how much money is being paid out to parents whose children have been documented and confirmed as having been hurt and killed by mandated vaccines.
Vaccines injure, no question about it. It's not even controversial to say that.
Clearly, vaccines have a serious safety question or issue.
But the studies that the FDA requires, that the CDC requires, are completely insufficient to ensure even a certain threshold of safety for vaccines.
If they were not unavoidably unsafe, they would not need liability protection. The Supreme Court in the Bruchowitz case say 32 times that vaccines are unavoidably unsafe. And if any thinking person considers it, that's the reason vaccines have liability protection in the first place.
We have a vaccine injury compensation program that has paid out $3.5 billion over the course of roughly 27 years. And just last year, fiscal year 2016, it paid out over $251 million because of people who are injured or killed by vaccines.
This database is underreported by anywhere from 50 to 1 to 100 to 1, meaning that for every adverse reaction reported, you have to multiply that from 50 to 100, get a more accurate understanding of the true depth of damage from these vaccines.
Based on what we know is happening in the animal studies, and based on what we know are the pathological findings in chronic illness in children and adults, can you show me the science that demonstrates whether what's happening in the animal model is happening in the human model that's contributing to the degree of illness that we're seeing? And their answer would be no. And so therefore you cannot say that just looking at those materials that vaccines are safe or that they've ever been tested for safety.
There are no safety studies showing that the combined doses are safe for babies to take at that very young age.
When I went to medical school and trained in pediatrics and worked in the clinic and ran the pediatric emergency room at a very busy inner city hospital, we didn't vaccinate day one of life. We didn't give the Hep B shot to newborns. We age adjusted for preemies. We didn't vaccinate pregnant women or women who were thinking of becoming pregnant.
When we talk to pediatricians now and we try to go over just the ingredients that are in there listed on the package insert or the contraindications listed on the package insert, or the adverse outcomes, including death, they don't know what it is because of the law, because they have been given liability protection. They don't know the basic safety profiles of these products. So when you walk in, you can have a textbook vaccine injury as described by the Department of Health and Human Services, and you will still be lectured by your doctor that it doesn't have anything to do with the vaccine.
We're told vaccines are effective. The FDA, which has to approve vaccines from the industry, they allow the industry to make a claim of effectiveness based on what we would call surrogate endpoints. Meaning, they don't have to show that the vaccine actually prevents the disease. They just have to show that there is an antibody production to that antigen that's in that vaccine. And that's all good and well if antibody production actually equated with immunity, but it doesn't. It equates with exposure, but it doesn't always equate with immunity. Can antibodies help fight infection? Yes, in many cases they can, but in most cases, innate immunity, which doesn't involve antibodies, is really what fights most infections.
So the whole word in the scientific literature about effective vaccines means that you create an antibody, but that doesn't necessarily translate from effective into protecting you from getting sick.
And oftentimes there isn't even that antibody generated in many of the people who are injected with vaccines. Elderly people, immunocompromised people often won't even generate that antibody, so it's often a complete waste in them. So that's how effectiveness is determined. By the companies when developing new vaccines.
You have fever and you have cytokines and you have white blood cells and you have all of these different types of portions of your immune system coming together in a dance. And that's where lifetime true immunity comes from. When you are re-exposed to a virus or re-exposed to that infection, your immune system has been fully engaged and recognizes that and says, I don't have to process that again. We've done that once. They push out a little bit of intrinsic immune system help to push that virus out of the way, and that's where true immunity comes from.
The way it's done with an injection actually sets the immune system up in a way that can lead to autoimmunity. And so that's one of the major differences between a natural infection and recovery afterwards, which is lifelong and normal, and an injection, which will maybe produce an antibody that will be temporary and won't necessarily be effective and could possibly be damaging.
And now, by issuing the strictest mandatory vaccine law in Europe, citizens of Italy came together to fight against oppression. A sea of people arrived in Rome from every Italian region.
Lorenzin, cancella la tua legge! Noi non siamo il tuo gregge!
Italians gathered to protest the decree law that would raise the number of mandatory vaccines from 4 to 12. According to this law, the unvaccinated kids will lose their right to education, their parents will be fined up to €7,500, and more importantly, the kids will be taken away by the local child protective services.
We already have policies in place at schools that require immunization records and things of that nature. A lot of people are put off when they hear the word government force.
The district will continue door-to-door visits until everyone is vaccinated.
If the current aggressive agenda for vaccines continues playing out, and this amounts to more and more people being required to get more and more vaccines with no end in sight, we are moving in the direction of what I can only call a vaccine police state.
Major health headline developing this morning. Lawmakers in California approving one of the toughest mandatory vaccination bills in the country now. The law would require parents to vaccinate their children before sending them to kindergarten, regardless of religious or personal beliefs.
The situation in California was very disturbing because choice was taken away. Both philosophical exemption and religious exemption were removed. And yes, the vaccine manufacturers were behind the lobbying and the financial support to make this happen. Again, I think that if people really truly believe in the spirit of vaccines, that they work and that they're safe, I think it's perfectly okay for them to go ahead and make that economic and health choice. But I think that there's also a growing amount of evidence as to why people would not make that choice.
Once you lose informed consent, you are literally handing over your life to the government, to the pharmaceutical companies. So if a state says, hey, you can opt out of the vaccines, we're not making you have vaccines if you don't want to. Of course, your kid can't go to school. That's coercion. And that's a violation of the Nuremberg Code, and it's a violation of the UNESCO Convention.
President Clinton made the formal apology on behalf of the federal government. The project denied treatment to men with syphilis, and the president says their lives were trampled on.
To the survivors, to the wives and family members, the children and the grandchildren, I say what you know. The pain suffered, the years of internal torment and anguish. What was done cannot be undone. But we can end the silence. We can stop turning our heads away. We can look at you in the eye and finally say, on behalf of the American people, what the United States government did was shameful, and I am sorry.
This is a very disturbing story, but it happened. Scientists working for the U.S. government secretly gave people sexually transmitted diseases as part of a study. It happened during the 1940s after World War II. At least 5,500 people in Guatemala, including prisoners, mental patients, and children, were experimented on. 1,300 of those exposed to STDs, including syphilis and gonorrhea. 83 people died during those experiments. And the goal of the research was to determine whether taking penicillin after sex would protect against those sexually transmitted diseases.
The Nuremberg Code, which was embraced internationally as the informed consent ethic that protects you when you are a participant in medical research, if a test, a medical test, if a surgery, if a pharmaceutical product can cause harm to you or your minor child, you have the human right to make a voluntary, informed decision without being coerced or harassed or threatened or punished by anyone.
I'm very much against any mandatory vaccination laws. I think not only are there mandatory vaccination laws coming for children, but there are also mandatory vaccination laws coming for adults.
Vaccines are required for members of the military, military families, military schools, civilian contractors working for the military. Vaccines are required for immigrants, including foreign adopted children. Vaccines are required at birth. They're required for daycare, school, and college enrollment. Officials from the FDA, CDC, and the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons have all said that something on the order of 90 to 99% of vaccine adverse events are never even reported. And that fact alone should be the basis for no one to ever be required absolutely to get a vaccine.
The government steps in and tells the doctor, you have to do this. Now you're looking at an official for the government and is telling you that it's a one size fits all, and if you're collateral damage, we don't care. You know, we're gonna lose some kids to these vaccines, we're gonna ruin some brains, but it's for the greater good. Well, that's not what the patient-doctor relationship is about.
The vaccine industry is not interested in being cut by two-thirds. World Health Organization is to be a $100 billion a year industry by 2025, and they're gonna do that not only by adding to the childhood schedule, but by mandating adult vaccines for public housing, for welfare, for any process that requires government permission for something. And even in private industry, they're starting to, as they say, they want to partner with private companies to make sure that adults have access to vaccines. But we know that first they are offered, then they are recommended, and then they are mandated.
There is this prevalent belief that if you vaccinate 95% of individuals, you will effectively prevent the spread of infectious diseases. The term that is used is herd immunity. So basically, you immunize almost the entire population, you will eliminate the spread of an infectious agent. Now, that theory sounds really good, but it's only a theory. This whole concept of herd immunity simply doesn't hold water, because if it were true, you should not see any cases of infectious diseases outbreaks in populations that have been vaccinated.
There was an outbreak of measles in Corpus Christi years ago. It was in a school that had a 97% vaccine rate, but all these kids started getting measles. They looked at their vaccine records. They'd been vaccinated. They actually drew titers, meaning their antibody levels, and found that 93% of them had antibody levels, and yet those kids went on to develop measles. So even with antibody levels, they developed measles.
But as long as people believe that herd immunity is true and is the only thing that exists as an understanding of how infectious diseases occur, then you're going to get people to continue to support mandatory vaccine laws. Because you have people who believe my child will not be exposed to your unvaccinated kid because your unvaccinated kid is carrying the germ.
There are academic papers that are termed the paradox of measles, meaning that you're more likely to contract measles in an outbreak if you have been vaccinated. In some of these outbreaks, not only were there every single child or teenager who contracted measles had been fully vaccinated, the few that weren't vaccinated did not come down with measles. If there was herd immunity from the vaccinated, why were they coming down with measles and the unvaccinated not?
In fact, your vaccinated kid could still be carrying the germ. But that is how the medical community propagandizes to the lay people about why vaccines should be mandatory. So they're capable of spreading the disease. But because of the propaganda, but because of the untruths, the spread of the disease is only blamed on the unvaccinated.
Currently, if you take a statin drug or an antipsychotic drug, or if you take a heart medication or sleeping medication, and if you're injured, you can sue the manufacturer. That is not the case with vaccines. Why?
In 1986, Congress, having accepted millions of dollars of vaccine industry money, of pharma industry money, passed a law that made it illegal for any American to to sue a vaccine company, no matter how dangerous the vaccine, no matter how sick the person got, no matter how reckless or negligent the company was, you can't sue them. And that emboldened the industry, and it emboldened the regulatory agency. It suddenly made vaccines immensely profitable.
When you start looking at the whys on this, why they've been able to get away with this, it really, the source of the problem is the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act that granted liability protection to vaccine makers and doctors and anybody involved in the vaccine program of any responsibility when a child is killed or an adult is killed or maimed by a vaccine.
That law was passed on the backs of children. It said, we have to protect the vaccine supply, but also these children are mandated to get these federally recommended vaccines. So we have to take care of the kids who are hurt. So they set up the federal vaccine compensation system, which has become a joke. It's a joke because that system was supposed to be an alternative to a lawsuit, not instead of a lawsuit.
Part of the impetus for that was the drug companies crying because the insurance companies were no longer going to cover them for vaccines. There had been many, many lawsuits that had been lost on the part of the pharmaceutical industry in the courtroom with people suing for their children's death or neurological damage, including autism. And Congress was behind this. And in the beginning, it looked like this might be not such a bad thing for the public because there was this table of injuries that was created, which had known injuries, including death and SIDS and neurological damage, encephalitis, chronic encephalopathy, for the specific vaccines, right? And if your child suffered this injury and it was on that table of injuries, then you didn't have to prove. You would get a settlement.
As they said, what we're gonna do is we're gonna charge 75 cents on every vaccine given and put that into a special fund. That removes the manufacturer from the picture. So you can't sue the manufacturer, you can't even get them to produce any documents, you can't even depose any of their scientists. What they've done is, in a sense, created a kangaroo court. Because in a regular court, what you're able to do is you're able to sue the company, you're able to get information, you're able to find out how many complaints they've gotten of a similar nature, you're able to depose employees at the company, engineers, scientists. You have no rights if you believe that a vaccine has injured you.
So if every American were to get vaccinated this year and every American died, they would have no legal recourse to sue anybody for their deaths. That is a stunning fact, and that is a reality. And the only ones who are immunized from vaccines are the manufacturers themselves.
I interviewed a very senior judge on this vaccine court. He said, from the very beginning of the court, what we did was we said, we know that vaccines can cause encephalopathy, which is brain swelling. We know that the damages from encephalopathy include autism. So what we say is that we have never compensated somebody for autism. We've compensated them for an encephalopathy, which results in autism. For your average normal person, your child didn't have autism before they got the vaccines. They got the vaccines, it caused a brain swelling and encephalopathy, and then they had autism. To me, that means vaccines cause autism.
They don't recognize autism, the word autism, because it is not a billing code in the U.S. healthcare system. Even though we have 2 million autistic kids, it's not recognized. Why? It's not a disease, it's a disorder. Why? It's a condition, not a one-time event. So it becomes interesting that autism isn't recognized, and yet a brain inflammation, which is certainly one of the driving forces for all autistic kids, brain inflammation, encephalitis. This is certainly recognized. And yet the government likes to play with words. At the end of the day, this is how they get away with saying vaccines don't cause autism.
Vaccine injury community and the autism community have been screaming to high heaven for the Department of Justice to do their job and protect the American people from this fraud. But what the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act has done is it has turned the Department of Justice into the lawyer for the vaccine industry, not for the American people. So the DOJ has no interest in investigating these scandals because they work for the industry. They defend HHS against Americans who have been harmed. They are CDC's lawyer against vaccine injury victims. So why in the world would the Department of Justice investigate vaccine injury fraud when they are the opponent's lawyer?
So there's no incentive on the part of the government to compensate these children, because there's no consequences for not compensating the children.
The removal of the Seventh Amendment rights to go to court and for people who are in the wrong to be examined under and questioned under oath has had devastating consequences from end to end in the vaccine program. There's almost nothing left in the program that functions as it should.
They tell you what problems vaccines will cause, and if it's not on that chart, you have to go and prove causation. Well, when you can't interview the company that made the product and you can't interview the scientists who designed the vaccine, that's a real high standard.
As insurance companies realize to pay out these children for the rest of their lives would basically bankrupt the industry. But that's what we're producing. So instead of that today, we're now actually have a massive wealth transfer of the American taxpayers to pay for more and more special ed. As more of these kids come online with autism and other developmental disabilities, we're creating more and more transfer of wealth from the taxpayers, from productive members of society who will never produce for the economy, and what's gonna happen to them in their adult lives when you have 3 million, 5 million, 7 million of these kids taken offline.
Parents actually rarely even get compensated. The vaccine injury compensation program that is supposed to take care of these families, most doctors don't know about it. Most families don't know about it. When you do find out about it, it's usually 3 years after the statute of limitations period starts. When you are able to file a claim, most suits are thrown out. So the financial burden for vaccine injury falls on the state that you're living in, Medicare, the local municipalities, the school systems, the justice system, and individual families to pay for these cases, when it is the job of the federal government that should be cleaning up this mess, but they don't. What they've done is the Department of Justice has become the lawyer to defend the pharmaceutical industry against individual Americans, when the true job of the Department of Justice is to defend Americans against industry that is hurting them.
The federal government subsidizes vaccine research and development to the tune of billions of dollars a year. State and federal governments mandate vaccines. If anything goes wrong, you got to go to the federal government to see if you can get compensation. This has got to be one of the biggest rackets on the planet here.
There have been four separate studies by the federal government, by the United States Congress, a three-year study, a one-year study by the United States Senate, a study in 2008 by the Inspector General of HHS, and a study last year by the Office of Research Integrity, and all of those studies have said the same thing. They've said that the vaccine division at CDC is a cesspool of corruption. The reason for that is because of financial conflicts of interest between people who work at the vaccine division and the vaccine industry.
The public health agencies, CDC, National Institutes of Health, these are criminal organizations, because only criminal organizations would not investigate harm to children.
One of the best examples is the Gardasil vaccine. The patent on the Gardasil vaccine and all HPV vaccines is owned by the National Institute of Health. That vaccine is then recommended by the Centers for Disease Control. It is approved by the FDA, and the court that decides whether or not it has hurt your child is the Health Resources Services Administration. All four of those sister agencies are a part of HHS. So HHS owns the patent on Gardasil. It approves Gardasil safety. It tracks Gardasil safety after it is sold to the public. It recommends it to the public, and it is the judge and jury over the safety in vaccine court. There's no disclosure to the American people that the HHS owns the vaccine patent on that vaccine. There is no disclosure that for every dose of Gardasil given, Merck turns around and writes a check back to the Department of Health and Human Services. The corruption is like it's like something out of a movie. It's hard for people to understand and wrap their brain around. They have to hear it several times before they get it.
The CDC, by promoting vaccines, is promoting pharmaceutical profits for the sale and administration of vaccines. The Supreme Court, when it ruled in 2011, using a phrase that vaccines are unavoidably unsafe, it too was serving the pharmaceutical agenda, because that was the basis upon which the U.S. Supreme Court said we are, for all practical purposes, removing any remaining liability to the pharmaceutical industry for the death and disability caused by the vaccines. These two pieces of information suggest the possibility of a network of corruption within our own federal government that seeks to advance a pharmaceutical agenda regardless of potentially very severe adverse consequences.
So companies pay the FDA to fast track a drug. The client is not the American consumer anymore. The client is the company is paying them to approve the drug. When you look at the CDC has more than 50 vaccine patents. They not only are recommending vaccines, but they are a part of the industry. Merck is their financial partner, and yet they are supposed to be objectively recommending their shots, and they are supposed to be evaluating safety of those shots, while at the same time, Merck is a customer of theirs to buy their patents to use in their products. The FDA and the CDC have become captured industries. They're not independent agencies. They don't work for the American people anymore.
The FDA allows these companies to omit data. They allow washout periods where, you know, if somebody had a bad reaction immediately, they just wash them out of the trial. This is the kind of stuff that goes on in drug trials all the time.
The CDC will not bring out toxicologists. They will bring out epidemiologists like Dr. Colleen Boyle, who's the head of the National Center for Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities, Dr. Frank DiStefano, the head of the Immunization Safety Office in the CDC, who cut their teeth lying about Agent Orange in Vietnam veterans and the incidence of cancer in Vietnam veterans. They learned how to lie with statistics back in the 1980s when the Agent Orange issue was on the fore because of all the Vietnam veterans that were exposed to this potent toxin.
Here we have this agency that has no credibility, that has the power in many instances of law behind it. If the CDC says something, people listen. If the CDC wants something done, they can declare medical martial law on the United States.
When you have the government basically being an advertising agency for the pharmaceutical companies that they're partners with, you have a very dangerous situation.
They lie, they hide data, they fabricate studies, they hire criminals to fabricate research, and then they parade them out in front of the media, which they have paid off handsomely to report the stories as they want them reported.
Beyond the CDC cooking the data, beyond the CDC buying scientists off to lie on their behalf, beyond the CDC of trying to prevent children who've been injured by vaccines from getting paid in vaccine court, has forced people like myself on my own money, on my own dime, to go over to Denmark to meet the scientists, to do the research that the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, CNN, all the ABC, NBC, CBS networks fail to do.
The media in the United States and really worldwide is in the tank for the pharmaceutical industry. It's not just Fox, it's Fox, it's CNN, it's ABC, it's MSNBC, it's CBS. If you look at those news agencies, 70% of their commercial proceeds come from pharmaceutical advertisement.
If they want a story to run, it'll get run. And if they don't want a story to run, it will not get run.
There's a lot of anger at the media because we have had more than 20 years of fraud in the vaccine program. We have an autism epidemic that started in 1988 when they started adding vaccines to the schedule, and the media will not report it correctly. They will not report on the scandal. They will not report on the fraud. And what we find when we sit down with individual journalists to pitch them stories and even do full interviews with them is that there are a number of them who want to do the stories and they're just not allowed to.
The media people know they are not allowed to touch the subject. This is a third rail subject. You can't touch it. Do you think any research scientist missed that Dr. Andrew Wakefield's head was chopped off and put on a pike outside the wall? If you've invested 10 years in your medical license and the expense that goes along with that, are you going to risk it all on vaccines, or are you just going to put your head in the sand and go on with your life?
They really have been able to control the debate and silence people like me, and I'm very grateful to you for having the courage to allow me on the show and talk and say, this is the second show in 10 years that's allowed me to talk about this, the other one being Bill Maher, which doesn't take advertising.
I just think it's interesting. And above all, I think you ought to be allowed to ask legitimate questions without being attacked.
Decision makers are putting the pharmaceutical interest above that of the health of the public under a false pretense of public health. And they're doing that in a way that is resulting in severe and avoidable harm. People are permanently disabled and sometimes killed by vaccines.
We now see from meetings held in secret at the CDC that they knowingly hid information about the dangers of vaccines. We have witnesses to this. We have whistleblowers to this. That should immediately call for a congressional investigation. The media should be asking for that investigation. The media is silent.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy to see all of you out here today finally telling the truth to this Congress, which needs to hear the truth for the first time. The government scientists are acknowledging that even tiny infinitesimal amounts of mercury, parts per billion, will cause profound neurological injury in children. And I started looking into it, and somebody provided me with the Simpson-Wood memo. Simpson-Wood was the transcripts of a secret meeting that was held between CDC and representatives of the vaccine industry, in which they reviewed a report that CDC had ordered, the Verstraten study, of the 100,000 children in the United States Vaccine Safety Database, which they are talking about the undeniability of the connection between autism and thimerosal, the impossibility of massaging the data further in order to try to eliminate those signals. That's what they spend the first 2 hours. The rest of the meeting they spend talking about how do we hide this from the press, from the public, and saying there's a clear link, not just with autism, but with a whole range of neurological disorders. Speech delay, language delay, all kinds of learning disorders, ADD, hyperactivity disorder, and the injection of these vaccines. And they could tell because, as you know, vaccine protocols were dramatically increased. When I was a little boy, we only got 3 vaccines. But my children, 5 of my 6 children, got 22 vaccines beginning in 1989. That's the thimerosal generation. That's the vaccine generation. And it's the sickest generation in the history of this country.
In 1999, a Dutch researcher by the name of Thomas Verstraten at the CDC at the time was assigned to look at the relationship between thimerosal-containing vaccines and autism, among other neurological disorders. He showed that individuals that got the highest dose of thimerosal in their first month of life were 7.6 times more likely to have an autism diagnosis than those children that did not receive any thimerosal in their first month of life. And no matter what type of statistical Olympics they used, there was still a relationship between the exposure of thimerosal and vaccines and autism in both boys and girls. And so the CDC then watered down, diluted down the relationship. So instead of showing a 7.6-fold increase in autism, they had about a 2-fold increase in autism. And at that point, because they could not get this relationship to go away, they convened a meeting that it was called the Simpson-Wood meeting. They munched and minced the cohort down, the population down into smaller pieces so they could remove statistical significance. They said, well, it's not consistent. We're seeing it in some data sets and not in other data sets. So they used that lock, stock, and barrel to dismiss any type of relationship between thimerosal and any neurological disorder in children.
There are more than 4 major scandals at the CDC right now concerning vaccine safety and efficacy. We have the Thorsen scandal, which is the Denmark studies that CDC hired Paul Thorsen in Denmark to run.
Dr. Thorsen, in April of 2011, was charged with 22 counts of embezzlement and money laundering because he had embezzled $1 million of these CDC grant dollars that Dr. Diana Shendell was writing off on. CDC does not want to have him extradited or anything to be opened up that would show that not only did he embezzle this money, that he took $1 million of research funding that was meant to do research regarding autistic children, but he also covered up the fact that vaccines are causing autism. There is a federal indictment for Dr. Thorsen, yet it's 2017 and he is hiding in plain sight. In fact, Dr. Shendell immigrated to Denmark in 2013, where their relationship continues to this day.
What steps has the CDC undertaken to ensure the integrity of the research that was performed by Dr. Thorsen, who, as you know, has been indicted for misconduct and misallocation of resources?
Dr. Thorsen, who was a co-investigator on a couple of studies that came out on autism, was really just one investigator. And that body of evidence related to vaccines and autism.
All right. Have you gone back to validate the variety of studies he participated in? I mean, you know this guy is a humongous scumbag, one of the most wanted men on earth, and you relied upon him for data to determine whether thimerosal had a negative effect. One of the witnesses told me that the fugitive doctor had been involved in a couple studies with CDC, and I have information here that he was involved in 21 of the 24 studies. And I would like to submit that to the record.
As a father of a vaccine-injured autistic son, I went to Denmark. I chased down the lead scientist involved. I got the main principal investigator, the PI, Christian Madsen, to speak to me on the record, to email me on the record. Madsen told me that Thorsen did zero work on those studies. That alone should invalidate the studies based on the Vancouver Protocol. Worse than that, Thorsen manipulated the studies, the no associational links, the data, any way the CDC cooked it.
I saw email traffic between the Denmark authors and the CDC where it showed that they were talking about how they shouldn't and couldn't show that autism rates were going down, so they simply omitted those points.
These Danish studies, these five Danish studies that were cooked up by the CDC to show no association, are nothing but lies.
The CDC's paper that came out that actually had nothing to do with thimerosal but looked at the decline of autism and autism spectrum disorder rates showed that after they phased out that mercury-containing preservative, that autism spectrum disorder rates went down at least at a minimum of 33% over the next 10-year period.
We have the Thompson scandal, the CDC whistleblower.
I'm seeing tapes, audio files released on YouTube. It is a senior scientist at the CDC talking with Brian Hooker about how it was the darkest day of his life and they were instructed to shred data.
I have great shame now when I meet families with kids with autism because I have been part of the problem. I shoulder that the CDC has put the research 10 years behind, all right? Because the CDC has not been transparent, we've missed 10 years of research because the CDC is so paralyzed right now by anything related to autism.
Right.
They're not doing what they should be doing.
When Dr. Thompson originally got a hold of me in 2013, he was one of the senior epidemiologists in the National Center for Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities. And he was very much ready and open to tell me exactly what happened in the CDC regarding these multiple instances of fraud.
There's too much corruption, too much conflict of interest, and our children are paying the price.
Well, it is an incredibly controversial subject, to say the least. But those protesters outside the CDC here in Atlanta say that the information being provided to the public about vaccines is not completely honest. And all of it hinges on one man. This guy right here, a scientist you've probably never heard of. That scientist's name is Dr. William Thompson, and it was on August 27th of 2014 that Dr. Thompson made an admission that got very little media coverage, but it was a major statement. That statement read in part, quote, "I regret that my co-authors and I omitted statistically significant information in our 2004 article published in the journal Pediatrics. The omitted data suggested that African American males who received the MMR vaccine before age 36 months were at increased risk for autism."
When Dr. Thompson revealed to me this fact that African American...
That is only one half of the documentary, but we're running out of time. I just wanted to show you all the different experts, all the different scientists and politicians and people who know the truth, and yet the media will not share the truth. The New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, MSNBC, all of them, Google, Facebook, they continue to prevent this information from getting to you. This is only a part of deadly deception. Tomorrow, we will open this up for your input. You'll have a chance to talk back on this, and I'll make some suggestions for what we, the people, can do to challenge all of the bad science and demand quality science, independent science. The corruption at the CDC and the FDA and U.S. Public Health Services is endemic, and we must step forward, or we will all pay a price for this, because now they're coming for the adults. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.